inside the off stump. Oh, he's caught it! I don't believe it! Tom Coler-Cadmore has caught the most magnificent catch. That short third man is the end of Daniel Sams, and Somerset have won the Vitality Blast 2023. They've bowled Essex out for 131.
Hello there, you're listening to Always Look at the Bright Side of Life. This is the Somerset Cricket Podcast. My name's Ian Shepherd. Joining me this evening, I've got digital guru for Somerset CCC, Ben Warren, and Elon Musk's new best mate, Dan Kingdom, who's been reinstated on Twitter this week after his ban was lifted. Was that the ECB being kind to you, Dan, and coming down off their high horse, or was it a grovelling apology?
I just appealed to Twitter and said there hasn't been any impersonation, and sent my passport into them. And but I did it initially, and then I just did it again like a week after I got banned. And that second time, about an hour or two later, I got an email saying you've been unsuspended. So I was like, oh great,
happy days.
So I'm not going to say anything more to Twitter about that. But
well,
yep,
they good stuff. So that was been this week's Always Look at the episode of Always Look at the Bright Side of Life, where we just talk about Dan's Twitter account, which I believe has opened proceedings for the last 2 weeks. So shall we get on to some cricket? Draw against Nottingham, slightly frustrating third day, the Sunday. One wicket for plenty, bowlers being run into the ground, and then it looked a little bit like more of the same on Monday, until the rain thankfully intervened and meant our ageing fast bowlers, well, that's ageing is a bit cruel, but our certainly world weary fast bowlers could put their feet up for the afternoon. But it did start off so well, bowling knots out 493 in the first innings. Then getting on to, 454 all out. Shoaib Bashir, we have already done the golden apple for brain fart of the year. You are not getting it, no matter what you do. And this applies to every Somerset player as well. I don't want you going off, you know, fucking about as much as you can to try and reopen this award for 2024. It is gone. It belongs to Miguel Pretorius. The book's closed. Should we start at the end, really? Because that was potentially one of the funniest things I've ever seen. was Craig Overton kind of running off, and I forget whoever it was on the live stream said, oh, Craig Overton's running off to get his to get his pads off and get his bowling boots on to get bowling. And I thought, no, he's not. He's running off because if he stays next to Shoaib Bashir, he's probably likely to belt him. And he is probably running off to destroy as many of Bash's possessions as he could lay his hands on before he got back to the pavilion. But great to see Craigo back in a bit of form with the bat.
There was a lot in that opening gambit, wasn't there?
There was. I'm surprised. Yeah, 2 minutes 30. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think... I guess if we start on the first morning, I felt that Somerset bowled really well on that first day, bowling out knots for 190. Could have been less, I think. I think there was some moments that went against Somerset, a couple of decisions either way, but I thought it was a really good spell of sustained bowling from Somerset that day. I felt it was the attack complemented each other well, and thought that they were perhaps unlucky that Notts got 193, but yeah, really, really good from Somerset on day one.
Dad, were you there on Friday? I was up for a bit on Friday, only Friday morning.
I was there Saturday, Sunday, Saturday was, well, batting wise, we started obviously excellent, didn't we? I mean, Dixon, it was great to see Dixon finally score some runs this season. Renshaw was solid without pushing on. Obviously, Josh Davey, you know, batting through the session as a night watchman, can't complain at all there.
Obviously, he needs to get that 100 every time he comes in, and he's, you know, there's a bit of a job to do, or he's coming in as night watchman. Like, yeah. Josh Davey's got to get 100 today. Josh Davey's got to get 100 today, and it was so close until Calvin Harrison did him with one that just slid on through. I thought he bowled well as well, but we'll come on to that a bit later. Yeah. Sorry, Dan, I've stopped you mid-flow there.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, we were obviously in a bit of danger of not really ramming home our advantage at 2-4-6-7, but I think Banton batted really well. I think it's obviously it's the best he's batted in a long time in the Championship, or since his 100 at Chelmsford a couple of years ago. He scored quickly without ever really forcing the aggression. He just defended soundly and basically caressed the bad ball to the boundary. There was very little real full-on aggression. Hit a few lovely fours. Batted as well as I've ever seen him in the Championship. So it's really encouraging, really, particularly when his place was not under immediate pressure, but he certainly needed to score runs at some point, knowing that obviously Abel's going to come back in and Kola Cadmore maybe, plus Umeed's obviously scoring runs for the second 11. He batted really nicely. And then, of course, over to the Pretorias. I think by then, the bowlers were probably tiring a bit. The pitch was flattening out, but that's not to take away from how well they batted. Craig, who's maybe struggled a little bit with the bat in the last couple of years and certainly not been as good as we know he can be. Really good to see him back in the runs again, and Pretorius endearing himself to the supporters.
What do you do with old Miguel now? I mean, we might need to balance out what we're saying about old Miguel. We're coming up with a new golden apple for sort of the phoenix from the flames of 2024, because he obviously batted really well in that first innings with 77, but I thought him and Craig and really all the bowlers, it was a real blood in the socks job on that Sunday, but they just kept going and going and going until the last ball, and again and then picked it up on Monday morning as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the pitch had obviously lost a lot of its life by that time. The new ball wasn't having any effect. It didn't, when it just sort of started to turn when Somerset on the evening of that second day, that new ball that the Notts took did nothing and only really accelerated the scoring. And I think that was kind of the point where you thought actually it's going to be really difficult for Somerset to bowl Notts out because of that movement had gone. There was still a little bit of pace in it, but the pace had died down from day one. So I honestly think that you just hold your hands up in that situation. I thought Somerset tried pretty much everything. I didn't think they bowled badly. There was the fact they didn't I can't even remember them beating the bat much. I mean, there was the odd play and miss, wasn't there? But I mean, it's not like they dropped any catches. It's not like they bowled a load of rubbish either of the players. I think just Joe Clark's obviously supremely in form, and hit the ball really crisply, and Will Young is an international player who was incredibly defiant, and the two complemented each other brilliantly. So could Somerset have done bits and bobs here and there to try and force wickets potentially, but I think on that pitch, with that caliber of player, I think you just say fair play.
I don't think there's anything that Lewis Gregory could have changed to turn that one wicket of Zeepermead early on Sunday into potentially the six or seven that they would have needed to take to win the game. With the weather on Monday, it was always going to be a draw. Potentially, would they have been able to get back on Monday if needed to, if a result was pressing?
I mean, it didn't really rain at all, really. If you're going to be, if you're calling a spade, they probably would have been on at 2 o'clock. It would have been day three. I think at that point, a little bit of common sense was applied to the rules. It technically they should have been back out there. There's no question about that in my mind. But I don't think anybody in that stadium, press, fans, players, umpires, wanted that game to go any longer than it needed to. So potentially Joe Clark would have.
He probably had a few records in his time. I mean, they were just short of the 400 partnership for the third wicket, which is it seems ridiculous to say. But I mean, while we're on the subject, then the decks at Taunton have been a little bit, well, there has been the odd one, or more than the odd one, that's been pretty lifeless, certainly as the games have gone on. First 2 days there seems to be a bit of them. Certainly first session, session and a half, maybe two sessions, and then they just slowly, slowly go to sleep. And if you look around at sides that have won the championship in recent years, Surrey at the Oval, they're good pitches, but they're quick pitches. You know, a good fast, but and they do generally turn a bit as well towards the end. So fast bowlers and spinners will do well there. Essex, well, we all know what goes on down at Chelmsford and Simon Harmer. We look at Durham; they were playing on making the Riverside. Is it still called the Riverside? Is it called the Set Unique Riverside Riverbank Arena? Whatever it's called at Chestiller Street. You know, they prepared some spicy wickets up there, made it real difficult for sides, you know, spent 10 hours on a coach a couple of days before, made that into a real fortress. So, you know, if we are going to win the championship, we need to get some life in the pitches, I think, because it doesn't matter how good your bowlers are, if they're flogging themselves to death and then having to be rested for potentially a week or two because they have flogged themselves to death, it's a lose-lose on both counts.
Yeah, I mean, I was just having... I had a look at sort of the last few years.
Of course you did that. I knew I didn't even need to ask you or even bother doing it myself because I knew you'd be on this.
Well, last year we had two of the matches at Taunton in the county championship were results. And there were five draws. To be fair, most of the draws were either rain affected or they were quite close to a result or both. Although in all of them you could kind of see that the pitch was flattening out, you know, against North France, for example.
North France were the one that sticks out to me. Leicester a couple of years ago sticks out to me as well.
Yeah, that was... Leicester 2021 was the absolute peak of flatness at Taunton before this week. In 2022, we actually only had two draws at Taunton, and both of those were quite badly rain-affected. I think they probably... Yorkshire and Gloucester, they probably both would have been resolved. So we have, at times in recent years, got it seemingly about right. If there was the Essex game in 2022, which is over in, you know, 2 days and a bit. If you go back further in 2019-18, in the sort of the cider bad era, there were obviously games that were over in 2 or 3 days. Some of them were matches which were more dominated by seam, of course, in sort of 2018-19. So we managed to find a decent balance there in terms of not having to worry too much about getting penalised for spinning pitches, but perhaps, obviously, there's the attitude these days of not wanting to encourage seamers too much. Back in 2019-18, I think we did try and produce pitches, I think, which were more encouraging to the seamers. Maybe for whatever reason we're reluctant to go back to that. I think maybe we could think about leaving more grass on the wicket. That's, you know, often the obvious thing that counties do to try and, you know, force results. Hopefully this was just a bit of an anomaly. It's early season. The pitches in April, actually, contrary to popular belief, in April's quite high scoring these days, and we know that it's difficult for ground staff to prepare wickets to be as best they can at this point of the year because of obviously the rain and that you sort of get around this time of year and leading up to the season. So hopefully it's an anomaly, but yeah, we'll see. I mean, obviously it will be an issue if these sorts of pitches do continue through the season, but hopefully they sort of know where they went wrong and can. Because Gregory said he was surprised, I think, wasn't he, about how quickly it flattened out. So clearly it wasn't the intention to produce a pitch like this.
Yeah. So. I mean, I got complete sympathy with Nick Pepper and his team because, you know, as I said before, it is sort of half art, half science. You don't quite... It's not like baking a cake. You put the exact ingredients in the right ratios in the oven for 40 minutes at 250 degrees or whatever. You should get the same thing every time. It really isn't like that at all. So I just wonder if it's because they count water, obviously count water the pitch once the match has started. So I just wonder if it loses moisture throughout the match might have something to do with it.
Well, I think that there's the obvious kind of historical kind of quirk with the Taunton wickets is that they don't tend to deteriorate, you know, through footmarks or other means. So the trouble that the ground staff have is where do you set your benchmark with day one? Because if it's too green or it's too zippy, then teams can be bowled out for 100, like we saw in that Essex game a couple of years ago, and elements like that.
We have wickets where Essex get bowled out for 100 every week, Ben. I don't see that as being a problem.
Well, the problem is we got bowled out for 100 as well.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
But you know, you don't want... I guess it's just trying to find that balance of the... I thought for the 2 days that was a really good cricket wicket. There was runs to be had on, and it rewarded batters when they played their shots. There was a little bit of carry in it. There was pace. There was a little bit of nip. So they're trying to play most of the county championship games towards the Andy Caddick Pavilion, because that end of the square has a slight slope, more of a slope on it, and it provides better indentations for the pace bowlers. So I think we'll find that most of the championship wickets, they want them to do something. You know, it's not a pre-planned intention to make pitches flat by day three. They want pitches that keep the bowlers in the game. They want to win cricket matches. So... they're gonna.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't doubt it as well. It's, you know, if us three sitting there going, would it be a good idea to have result pitches to win, you know, so you can win games and win the championship? You can bet your bottom dollar that Lewis Gregory, Andy Hurry, and Jason Kerr sat there having the exact same thoughts at a level far beyond what we're talking about. So you know,
and Nick's done a terrific job. You know, the circumstances in which he had to get that game with, you know, one pre-season game. That would have been at Taunton Vale, the outfield issues that they've had, which, you know, that looks fantastic, the ground itself. So, you know, I thought it was the ground staff did a great job in getting that to where it was. I think, yeah, you're right, it probably flattened out a little bit, you know, a bit quicker than everyone had anticipated, but they're trying to find that balance whereby it keeps the bowlers interested throughout the 4 days. And I think that, unfortunately, I think the deterioration thing is just a trait of the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been, I don't even recall during the cider about days the pitch is getting worse. They tended to spin on day one and then continue spinning, but I'm not sure that it's really going to be all that possible to have a pitch like your traditional test match pitch that starts off well for batting and then genuinely as the game goes on gets more difficult, and by day four it becomes a real challenge. I think that is a, you know, I don't know exactly know the terminology, but you know, I don't think that's necessarily that easy a task for us to achieve, but I think it's what is achievable is getting that balance right between it doing too much early doors and flattening out by day three and four.
Yeah, say it as many times as you want, it's 50% art, 50% science, and sometimes the cake will rise and sometimes the cake will come out looking like a pancake. And, you know, it's just, well, Nick Pepper and his team have and I'm sure all of ours, eternal sympathy. Raised a few eyebrows Friday morning, when Casey Aldridge was rotated out of the 11. Now, I assume that there is some sort of rotation policy in place for these first seven games, but I just wonder if there should have been a bit of pragmatic flexibility with Casey, given that he's had probably the game of his life up at the Oval, played really well, took a bag full of wickets, scored some runs, and then he's benched 3 or 4 days later for a game that we probably could have won.
Well, yeah, the way I see it, I mean, the one reason to sort of really stick to a rotation policy like that is so that if Casey knew he was going to be rested for the Notts game, he could have gone all out at the Oval, you know, without worrying about, oh, I've got to save myself for the next match. So that's kind of the reason to sort of rotate in and out regardless of form. You know, say it's Craig due to be rested at Kidderminster, he would have gone all out in this game, you know, that in the Notts game. But yeah, it's difficult balance of strike, really, isn't it? You know, they'd obviously, if they'd sort of gone back on that and then Casey got injured in this game, they'd have regretted it hugely. So yeah, it's difficult, but I'm sure Casey will be back for Kidderminster. But yeah, it's just about finding that balance between planning ahead, but also, yeah, being pragmatic and picking your form bowlers at the time. I'm sure the bowlers themselves probably have views on it. I mean, maybe Casey sort of was you know, always happy to have a rest in this game. I don't know, but
I think it wasn't an injury, but I think there was some concerns about his bowling foot and the one he landed on. I don't, you know, it's not as if it was an injury, but I think they just wanted to, you know, after two tough games, particularly at the Oval with a hardish pitch, I think that rotation is always going to be part of how Somerset have to make up their bowling attack this year with Craig and Lewis. Craig coming back from big injury, Lewis is obviously not going to play every single game. So I think we're going to have to get used to the fact that bowlers are going to be rotated pretty heavily. You would say on paper that they look better equipped than they potentially have in the last couple of years to deal with that, and the proof will obviously be in the pudding, but they do look like they've got some options. Obviously Casey didn't play the last game, still they bowled knots out for 193, looked a good unit. We've got a couple of other options there, haven't they? Jake Ball, Ned Leonard have all played games this season. Alfie Ogbonn seems to be knocking on the door. So they do look better equipped as a unit to be able to cope with rotation than potentially they have done in the last couple of years. So, again, the key will be, you know, I sort of used the analogy the other day about a football team. You know, when you rotate a couple of players in a football team, you should be able to still play the same identity, and you should just freshen things up rather than completely downgrading what your output is. And I think Somerset will feel that that's how they're going to adopt their championship campaign, is being able to rotate through necessity and through the demands of cricket this summer, but equally they can rotate effectively and bring in different bowlers for different conditions, rest bowlers when they're having a little bit of a niggle and not have to push them through the pain barrier, and hopefully with the signing of Jake Ball and some of the development of the younger players, they've got a more flexible base that they can put out bowlers of similar quality.
Agreed. I always generally think my mind is always cast back to the Chris Silverwood, Joe Root era of, oh, we're going to keep Anderson and Broad fresh for the pink ball test, and then they're 2-0 down by the time the pink ball test comes around. So, you know, I'm sure that, you know, Thorpe and his team know a lot more than what's going on with the players than we do, and if there is a little bit of a niggle. But my general point is, I don't like rotating sort of planning your rotation schedule 3 or 4 weeks in the future. I think a bit off looking at what you get. If somebody's pulled up really well from a game, because, you know, humans are human, they're not robots. Sometimes you can have what you might perceive to be a pretty easy game and feel absolutely knackered, or you can, you know, bow yourself into the ground and feel like a million bucks the day after. Rarely happens, but anyway. What else we got? Runs for Sean Dixon as well. Runs for Tom Banton. I did notice Tom Lammerby made a couple of changes, not necessarily to his technique, but what he does between balls. So I won't tell you what those are, but if you want to have a look at a live stream from this season and a live stream from last season and see if you can spot the difference. So it's you know, he's not praying to the sun god Ra or anything like that, but yeah, it's just, I think it's a couple of little psychological things that he's doing just to get his head in a better space, and it certainly seems to be paying off. What else you got? Ben Green has gone on loan to Leicester, who decided to bat him at 9.
But to be fair, Ben Mike, who batted above him, did score like 96 a week or so ago. So
yeah, but Ben Green's gone from opening in Division 1 of the Championship and scoring bucket loads of runs in the One Day Cup to and the Blast as well, to batting, going up the road to Grace Road, or no, the Incora Steel County Ground. Is it still called that?
You mix up Leicester. Incora County Ground is Derby, it's Upton Steel.
Oh, County Upton Ground, Steel. The Upton Steel, Upton County Ground. Yeah, sorry.
But to be fair, Greener did batter like 8 for us last year in a couple of games. So,
but we're better than Leicester.
He should be higher than. He's better than. Yeah, exactly. He is better than 9 for Leicester. Yeah.
And he bowled pretty tidy as well. I don't think he took one wicket or a couple. I don't know.
I don't think he did. The day 4 was washed out, wasn't it? I think. They were in a winning position.
I am slightly concerned about Bashir's lack of wickets over the couple of games that he's played, given that a lot of spinners have taken a lot of wickets towards the start of the year. Sort of brought this up last week. Yeah, what was match figures? 32 overs, 4 maidens, 1 for 126, and the one was a pretty ropey longer pass side leg sub that Joe Clark very obligingly slapped to mid-wicket. I guess it just proves what a good bowler Jack Leach is, and I guess it also proves that you know, for all the England call-ups and how well he bowled in India, he was that kind of pick for those sort of pitches in India, and the pitches here are going to be different. Pitches in England in April are going to be different to pitches in India, and you know, it just goes to show that he is, you know, still got a bit of a long way to go on his journey, I guess, and probably not to put too much pressure on him at this early stage.
Yeah, I'd agree. I actually thought he bowled really well at the Oval without much luck. I think, yeah, it was tough. It was tough, you know. It wasn't any spin for him, so you know, it is tough being a spin bowler when the ball doesn't spin. I know that sounds obvious, but you know, he tried a few things. He tried going over around the wicket. Joe Clark played him very well. I don't think you can read too much into it. I think that, you know, you can probably bemoan his batting more than his bowling, I think. But I personally, it wouldn't surprise me if he went up to Kidderminster, and if there was a little bit in that pitch for the spinner, and I'm sure he would,
do a good job. Outgrounds, club grounds, whatever you want to call them, do generally give you a bit more to work with as a spin bowler. So, as you say, I think it's a case of keeping him in the side as much as we can, bowling him as much as we can, and you know, if he does need to go off to the second team when Jack's back. I saw Jack was bowling a bit during the intervals at Taunton over the weekend, so you assume he'll be kind of back pretty soon-ish.
Yeah, early May, I think.
Early May for Jack, so yeah. I mean, I don't think it's controversial to say that, you know, as soon as Leach is fit, he's back in, but Bash will need to be bowling a hell of a lot in the seconds, which is obviously going to happen anyway. So there we go. Just one thing, anything more on the Knox game? I'm just looking. Oh, James Rue played a slightly odd shot to get out, didn't he? It was. Have a look at it if you haven't seen it, but it sort of watching it live, he sort of went, looked like he went to hook it or maybe uppercut it, and it got big on him, and he kind of flapped it, and it just flew into the leg side, and the catch was taken at sort of square leg mid wicket. But then looking at the replay, it was sort of a good foot and a half outside his off stump, so it was a bit, it wasn't like it was coming straight for his head and he went, oh my goodness, and flapped it. So it's a very un-James Rue-esque shot from sort of what we've seen, his kind of calm demeanour over the last certainly last season, where you just patiently accumulate and churn out these big hundreds every week. I don't know, is it second season syndrome? Have the analysts been looking at him and think there's a weakness here, as can often happen second time round? I don't know, but I think there's just so much talent there, it'll come good.
Yeah, it's obviously early, you know, it's too early to tell if there's genuine issues, you know. I'm just looking now at what he did last season. Yeah, last season he started with scores of 6, 14, 18 and 25. And he's about the same, yeah, he's about 4 times this season, hasn't he, as well? So
57, 22 and 12.
Yeah, and in his fifth innings last season he scored 117, and then, you know, then he hit 47, 89, 105, 118 now. So it might be that he just needs a bit of time just to get into it. Yeah, as you said, I mean, you know, all young batters at some point, if they start their career with a bang, they always will, you know, decline a little bit at some point, because as bowlers work them out, and then they sort of learn new ways to counter, you know, new ways of countering the bowlers who have you know, found out the weaknesses and stuff, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully this isn't, hopefully that's not what's happening. Hopefully this is not his like decline season, but we will see. Yeah, he's looked slightly, yeah, I think you kind of discussed it last week. He's not quite looked himself yet, despite scoring a 50 at Canterbury, but even that, he looked a bit frenetic, I gather. I didn't actually see, manage to see any of that. But yeah, it's early days yet, so I'm sure he'll come good. He just needs to try and, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? Because obviously maybe it's partly he wants to improve on last year, but that means he maybe has got away a little bit from the things that served him well. It's about finding the balance between trying different things to improve, but while also maintaining the fundamentals from before. So let's wait and see. But yeah, four innings, it's not enough to judge, is it? And obviously his place is pretty secure because I don't think anyone else is, you know.
Can you say your catchphrase, Dan?
Or sample size?
Very small sample size.
It is. So
happy days. I'm gonna move my mic down a bit. Anything else then on the Notts game before we move on? We talked about Sean Dixon a bit, haven't we?
So yeah, great catch as well.
Oh yes, back. Oh that was a belter to get rid of was it Slater on that second evening. Yeah, so I was stood in the car park with Harry watching that, and I thought, oh, he's not getting that. Oh, he's got it. I mean, he's a funny little fella, Sean Dixon, because he doesn't look like the typical sort of body type for a gun fielder, but he is an absolute gun fielder, especially in the blast last year, out patrolling the boundary. He was just faultless, and yeah, it's very it's funny the way that he's just kind of, he's there, boom, boom, great pair of hands as well. And he just kind of looks a bit, I don't know what the word is. But you know what I mean? You look at sort of Abel and he's kind of like, he's sort of skinny and lithe, and Dixon's a bit more thickly set, but and doesn't really look like he could move like he can, but he does.
Mm.
So, on for it. Last thing on the Notts game, Gordon Hollins was presented with a little plaque at lunch on Saturday, just to commemorate his tenure as CEO, which is coming to an end at the end of the month when Jamie Cox will take over. So that was a presentation from Sir Michael Barber. Yeah, all the best, Gordon. He's off to spend a bit more time with his family up in Yorkshire, and I think it's fair to say, coming in, as he often says, during the start of the pandemic, was a bit of a baptism of fire. But yeah, done a good job, and yeah, we all like Gordon. I understand that Ian Botham's stand is going to be renamed the Gordon Hollins stand, and then immediately shut to save money. That's what I said. Boom, boom, that was my joke. Don't take it personally, Gordon. Sorry about that. Right, we talked a little bit about the side for Worcester. I mean, Gregory said in his interview with Gibbo at the end of the game that he's going to be fit. I think Gibbo said, are you going to be fit for Worcester? He went, oh, always. So I presume does that mean he's going to play just as a bat and be a bit like Ben Stokes and bowl four or five if needed?
Well, it depends on how we balance the side.
If
we need a fifth bowler, then we'll have to adopt one of the batters if Gregory's going to play pure as a batter. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe the fact that day four was, you know, almost entirely washed out against Notts might have given Gregory some encouragement that he'll be okay to play it. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think in terms of team, I think the top six is obviously set. Gregory hopefully will play. Mm-hmm. Aldridge will obviously come back in. Overton hopefully will play. Although we might want to save him for the following week against Essex, because if he plays this week and Essex, he'll have played four in a row. Bashir will play, I think. So it's difficult to say, really, isn't it? Because we can't really predict.
Think either Ball or Davey will possibly come in for Craig?
Sorry?
You think Ball or Davey will potentially come in for Craig, and that would be the only change?
Davey played anyway. You mean Aldridge?
Oh, sorry, Aldridge will come in for Davey, and then Ball potentially in for Overton, or Davey in for Overton. Oh, I'm confusing myself now.
it's basically, if Aldridge comes in, it's whether we decide to rest Craig and then we might keep the rest of the attack the same, or maybe we decide to give Davey. Will we give? No, I don't think Davey will have another rest. He missed the previous week, didn't he? So I think Davey will play.
Are you sat there smugly knowing what the squad is, Ben, which is in Barbados?
You keep doing this podcast on Wednesday evenings.
I tell you what, why don't we just officially announce the squad on the podcast on Wednesday nights? There we go. How about that?
So obviously the team.
Gordon is not going to agree to that after I've had a go at him for shutting all the stands now. So that's.
Team are off tomorrow morning to Kidderminster. So obviously the squad are kind of know who they, because otherwise they wouldn't be travelling.
Oh, I'd love that. You get a phone call from Sarge, like The Apprentice. You get a phone call from Sarge. I tell you what, he'd be bloody good on The Apprentice, wouldn't he, Sarge?
Yeah,
he'd be a great replacement for Alan Sugar. There you are, Ben. That is content. Make it happen over the winter.
The agreement between all of the first class counties is that at 2 o'clock on the day before, everyone releases their squads. So,
okay.
Is
that a legal agreement or is it a gentleman's agreement?
So all the counties got together a couple of years ago and decided that would be the best port of call, that everyone would announce their squads at 2 o'clock the day before a county championship game.
Yeah, I kind of always assume there must have been some kind of agreement there, because in the last few years it's been pretty obvious that everyone at 2 o'clock, boom, all squads. Like Premier League is always 1 hour before, isn't it? They name the teams. So
yeah,
good. I mean, just circling back, Dan, I think you said that the top six are pretty much nailed on, and I agree for this. Let's go. I mean, Andy Umead, after scoring 154 in the twos up at Headingley, has definitely thrown his hat in the ring. Yeah, that's the right one. I was going to say name in the hat and then hat in the ring. So he's thrown his name in the hat, and then the hat has now gone into the ring for selection. And looking at the numbers, really, sort of Dixon, Goldsworthy, and Banton, they've all kind of scored enough, but neither of them has really stamped a rock-solid case to be included when certainly Abel, and then TKC is a bit more 50-50 for me whether he gets straight back in, but certainly Abel's come straight back in. I mean, Dixon is 17-0-10-72, Goldsworthy 35-10-58-3, Banton 28-1-11-83. So they've all made scores, but none of them. I know it's only three games of four innings, but
is this not what we? You know, I think that is a pretty much a microcosm of Somerset's batting. You know, none of Somerset's batters are utterly hopeless. They wouldn't be playing in Division One, but I guess for Somerset to build on the places that they've been having over the last few years is that exactly. Point, you know, they all tend to contribute. They just don't put together the frequency in which they do so. They've all got it in them on their day, but there's not the consistency of output. And I think probably that microcosm of the likes of Banton, Dixon, Goldsworthy, that is what Somerset need to be better at. They need more players scoring as consistently as Abel to be able to challenge and put runs on the board to put opponents under pressure. We tend to get a lot of they deliver one in four, one in five, and then we go, great, why should he be dropped? You know, he's just got 50, and then they'll tend to go on a little run where they don't do so well, and then just as they're about to get dropped, they score runs again. And I feel like that is a bit of a microcosm of Somerset's batting lineup in general, that they probably need one or two of those players to really put their foot down and deliver really consistent runs.
Yeah, I mean, sort of talking about that, I've just totted it up. 15 scores of 50 or more this year amongst everybody, and only one of those converted to 100. Which is, I'm including, like, you know, 40s and 50s. Well, this is everybody, including down the order as well. So I'm including Craig's 95 not out now, which I probably shouldn't. So 14, we'll say 14 50s, and only one convert to 100, which was, of course, Lamonby at the Oval, which can't knock somebody for getting 100, but it was 100 at that. So
I think it's kind of a been a bit of an issue converting 50 to 100 in the last few years. I remember in the shortened 2020 season, we were really good at converting 50s to 100s, although it was a small sample size, of course. It was only six matches. But yeah, I'm building on that as well. I think we don't often get really big scores. We don't often convert the 100s into 150s and beyond. You know, Tom Lowenby has I think, seven first-class centuries. His high score is only 116. Tom Abel, I don't think, has a double century. I think his high score is only about 150-odd. You'd expect someone of his quality to have a score a bit higher than that. When was the last time a Somerset batter scored a double century? I actually don't know the answer, but I think it's been a pretty long time. Maybe Trez, 2015, against Sussex, off the top of my head? It's been a while.
Hildy got one against Worcester.
What was Hildy's 300? That was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 2009, that was. Yeah. But yeah, we have extremely talented batters, but they just don't quite consistently enough produce the goods for us to be, you know, one of the top sides.
I was quite pleased to see what Lammers was doing, which you need to go and have a look on the streams to work out what it is, but it is pretty obvious. But that to me kind of says that, you know, I think yes, he is looking to play the ball a bit later and he does look a little bit tighter, but also recognising that psychological aspect, the mental aspect of it, that, you know, that cricket is played, you know, the stumps are 22 yards apart, but it's really the grey matter between your ears that counts. And if you are recognising that you need to improve both aspects of that, as a lot of guys, I think, have done over the winter, then they should be all the better for it.
Do we have anything else then? Essex might get deducted some points. That's hilarious. Never mind. Ferroz Kushi's bat was a little bit too big. So Durham got did 10 points for that, didn't they?
Yep.
Which I think that wasn't the bat, though. That was extra tape around the bat, which is still the bat. So, oh well, that'd be a massive, massive shame if that happened. And our sympathies would go to. Actually, no, they wouldn't. I'd piss myself if that happened. Peter Siddle has gone to Durham as well, which is a bit of a surprise. I mean, Ben, do you know if we reached out to Sids to fill this little void, or were we looking for more of an all-rounder? And I mean, I thought from the noises he was making towards the end of last season that this was it. He was done and dusted with county cricket.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they were looking for someone to bowl a sort of a quicker bowler. You know, not that Miguel is absolutely express pace, but I think in these early season, particularly with the Kookaburra ball, I think they potentially, for that first game we played, I think they were potentially looking at someone just a slightly different profile than Sids, as good as he is. You know, I think, there's certainly been a very good relationship between the club and Peter Siddle. I know that he's kept in touch with a number of the guys. I don't know if he's going to play again. I don't know if we've got Durham in those games that he's playing, is there?
Yeah, we do, yeah.
That's away, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Which is a shame, because his signature is missing from that shirt of the sign. I'm sorry, listen, you can't see what I'm doing. I've got a signed T20 shirt of everybody. Not everybody. It's probably got about three quarters of the squad in it. I thought, Peter Siddle's missing. I'm never going to get that again, so...
Are we going to Justice Street? So if you want to hand it to me...
I'll see you at... Right, let's work this out. This is going to be strategic now.
Kent game is the week before,
yeah,
isn't
we've
it?
Got the Kent game before that. And do you know what's actually... It's kind of annoyed me about that shirt as well, is that James Roos signed it, and he wasn't part of the vitality of the winning squad. So not going to turn a sign... Well, I nearly said free. It wasn't free. I paid a bit of money for it at one of Matt Swallow's testimonial auctions, but... Yeah, I don't know. That's just a kind of the anal cricket fan in me, is that he's Brewies on there. And anyway, moving on then. Right, I've not got. Oh, should I have a quick chat about Western Storm, who went down by 10 runs up at Edinley today against Northern Diamonds. I was dipping in and out of it, but it looked to me like, apart from Danielle Gibson, everybody seemed to get themselves in and get themselves out.
Yeah, I mean, I've only sort of half followed it. It's pretty remarkable, actually. They scored 265, but with a high score of 35.
Yeah.
It's pretty surprising. Yeah, I mean, they've obviously they improved a lot on the game on Saturday against Sunrisers, where they were pretty terrible.
They lost by 8 wickets, didn't they? Brought out for 120 odd.
114, yeah.
Sack the batting coach. Who is their batting coach now? It's Pete Trigo.
He's one Mr. Trigo, yeah. Yeah, today it was clearly much improved. I mean, they did have diamonds on the ropes a bit, actually. They're 89 for 5 diamonds. Armitage scored 103, and Abby Glenn, the bowler, scored 53 down the order. Storm made a good go at chasing it. I think they almost snatched it right at the end. There's a couple of boundaries right near the end when it looked pretty beyond them. But yeah, much more encouraging performance, I think. I don't think Storm's best chances here is in the Hare Finn Trophy. Storm's best chance of getting towards finals is certainly the Charlotte Edwards Cup. I think the Flint is more of a learning experience for the players. I think it's still a pretty young team. Amanda Day Wellington's bowled pretty well so far, I think. She's obviously completely unsurprisingly looking like an excellent signing. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they go over the next few games. Good to see improvement today. I think they play at Taunton quite soon, don't they?
Yeah, they come to Taunton next Wednesday. So that is a day game, so 10:30 start, not 11 o'clock. So yeah, it'd be good to see as many people down as possible. Obviously,
is that included with membership now? Well, it was last season. It's still included with membership.
It is, and also we've got welcome Western Storm members to that category as well, which is great. Yeah, obviously is our first women's game since the Tier 1 status was announced. So yeah, it'd be great to see as many people as possible. There's another game actually. There's one on the 20, I think it's the 22nd, which is a T20 floodlit game. That should be a really good one for people's diaries. I think it's the 22nd off the top of my head, but please do check. But yeah, it's a floodlit T20. So yeah, we're really looking forward to that one as well.
Good stuff. Right, AOB then, before we move on to listeners' questions. I think we've covered most of...
One more thing. Somerset Women did play on Sunday.
Oh, yes, they did play on Sunday.
Well, yeah, pretty good win against Cornwall, who scored, I think, 183. Just having a look now. Yeah, 3 for 19 for Nicole Harvey, 2 for 25 for Lola Harris, 2 leg spinners. Lola Harris, of course, in the Western Storm squad this year. And yeah, Somerset chased down. There's a little bit of... they were 61 for 3, but then 57 from captain Emily Edgecombe and 59 for Julie Roberts meant they got home pretty comfortably. Yeah, obviously I didn't see that game, but just go by the scorecard. But yeah, it looked like...
Were you not nipping back and forth?
Wish I could. It's not too far. Yeah, it was at the Vale, wasn't it?
Okay, right. We'll start with... Oh, Jeremy asked about Essex being deducted points. That would be hilarious if they did. AK asks, how can the ECB fix the umpiring in the county championship? What we saw versus Notts was a disgraceful performance for both teams. The glove to slip off Bash, Renshaw should have been run out. Constant plum OBW is given not out. Then Lammers triggered with one clearly swinging down leg. It was awful. I don't know. DRS can't be far off, Ben.
DRS. I mean, I guess that would probably be the only thing. I'm not sure that there's been any sort of differentiation in standard. I guess just the quality of cameras and replays that counties are piping on the umpires these days. We've got umpire cams and things as well. So
yeah, they're great. I love them. Can you get a live feed off them, or do you just have to get the memory card at the end of the day and get what you need?
No, they're beamed via Wi-Fi back up to the our PCS Pro feed.
That little white satellite dish was on the Trez.
Yeah, there's a little white satellite dish. It's called iHawk. That's there to kind of take the footage remotely off the cameras and send them up to us. So yeah, we tend to get the umpires cam through from both ends. We get the side one and the about in about four or five balls it takes to come through. So yeah, that's been a great addition. I've seen quite a lot of cool little clips been shown from all of the counties, which is great.
Have they got sound as well?
No, we're not. We've been given quite strong directives from the ECB as to what we can and can't post, and sound is definitely off the table.
It's the bloody ECB. Who pays the ECB's? Well, it's members, people who subscribe for Sky, people who buy tickets. We want to hear it, unfiltered.
But that would be my comment around the umpire, and there were a couple in that game, weren't there, that were potentially a little bit dubious, but I think most games in county cricket there are, and I think the more that we sit up there in the studio and rock and roll, and these days with different camera angles and stuff, and other counties do likewise,
it's funny because the best umpires get the most help, i.e. the umpires that are graded best around the championship get on the international panel, get the benefit of DRS and everything to help them, whereas the umpires who aren't so good don't have that safety net, which does seem a little bit counterproductive. But like I said, the way that technology's becoming more available and getting cheaper and the live streams are improving, I think it's only really a matter of time before it's brought in. Has something changed on the live stream, Ben? Because I was watching it on Sunday and it just seemed to have a little bit extra polish. I don't know, it just seemed to be like, are there like two more angles or something? It just seemed to have a little bit more, I don't want to say professionalism, like you've been banging rocks together for the last 5 years, but do you know what I mean? It just seemed to have gone up a level since last season.
Yeah, we've got a couple of bits we've added. We've added a new camera angle by the Lord Botham stand. So that's looking, it's ground level. We've also added a new effects mic, which we've been doing a little bit of tinkering with during that game. Sometimes it was a little bit here and there, but we've got a new effects mic, which should give us much more clear sort of bat on ball and bowlers sort of running in kind of sounds. And yeah, just a few other little bits behind the scenes, really. But yeah, the biggest sort of visual change this year is that there's a new camera angle from ground floor of the Colin Atkinson / Botham in that gap.
And I suppose it really only does take a little improvement like that, it just mixes it up and it does give it that extra level of sort of gets it a bit closer to TV coverage. Any more questions? There was one that I saw. John Hayes says, Worcester become a must win? I think potentially yes, kind of not in the sense of saving us from relegation, but certainly keeping pace with the rest of the pack, because you have to assume that somebody else will win a game in Division 1 of the Championship next week. So you think certainly to keep pace it would be a must win. I don't know what you guys think, but
yeah, I mean, if we have title aspirations, we've got to you can't let Essex and Surrey get too far ahead. I mean, we're third at the moment, it's solid enough, we're 16 points off Essex, 8 behind Surrey, so, and obviously on paper this is one of the easier games. It's certainly easier than the following week against Essex, so yeah, if we don't win this game it'd be difficult to win against Essex, and then we won't have won in at least 5 games, so yeah, let's wait and see. But
I agree. I think it's more than just the points as well. I think they need to get a win on the ball for the confidence. I think if they go four games without winning, I think, you know, they're going to, you know, not that the bonus points have meant that they're in a pretty good position table wise, but I think that if they could win this game, it would give them, you know, there's still quite a lot of fixtures in this block before the blast starts. I think it will really start to give them a bit of momentum if they can win. So for me, if they want to be up and around it, this is a fairly must-win game.
I think we have played really well, and the players will know we've played pretty well this season. We've made a much better start than the last couple of seasons, so yeah, they'll be desperate to turn it into a win.
Yeah, I mean, it's not been too bad, you say, with 8 points for the draw and other sides. You know, nobody's won 3 out of the first 3 and is light years ahead at the top of the table. Everybody is within reach. Nobody is running away with it. And you say, we've got Essex again. Well, not again. We've got Essex in a couple of weeks, who have probably been deducted 10 points, so they'll be down below us. So, yeah, all to play for and quietly confident.
just whisper it. This could be the year.
That's horrendous.
Yeah, that's, yeah, I've blown it for everybody. Right, anything else before we knock it on the head?
Nothing else on me.
I think we've covered all the other questions in the general chat. There was some of that popped into my eyes. Oh yeah, Don Topley's on next week previewing the Essex game. So I don't think either of you on next week.
I don't think I am. You're not. You're lucky sods. I've become available. So
you're available. Right. Well,
if someone drops out, I think I should be able to do next week. But yeah, double check if someone does drop out. But yeah.
Okay. Or should we just all come on, like all 10 of us regulars, and just gang up on Don? No, we wouldn't do that, Don. We're joking. But yeah, looking forward to that next week to take a quick look ahead to the Essex game with Don Topley. And yeah, best of luck to Lewis Gregory and the boys up on the road to Kidderminster. We discussed this last week. They're the carpet men, aren't they, Kidderminster?
Yeah.
Good stuff. Right. Best of luck, guys, and catch you next week.
Cool.
Cheers, Shep.
Cheers, all.
Bye.
Ta-ra.
Cheers. Bye.